because we've got a Betsy limitation bill showing up Friday.
I'm going to call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. Sorry we're getting off to a little bit of a late, leisurely start today. I'm going to start by opening a work session on Senate Bill 77. And this bill was on the agenda yesterday, and we got the fiscal statement, and it does have some fiscal impact, so I carried it over today, till today, to find out from the president's office what the intentions were because of the fiscal. So I think what we're going to do today is get this bill moving and just go ahead, since it doesn't have a subsequent referral, to go ahead and pass the bill out of committee. And then when it reaches the president, he can decide whether or not to send it to the Ways and Means Committee before moving it on to the House. So that's what we're going to do with Senate Bill 777. And we have a Dash 3 amendment that was described yesterday, as was the bill. And so, Senator Morse, unless people want to discuss this further before a motion, Senator Morse, if I could have a motion from you for the Dash 3 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 77.
Senator Morris has moved the Dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 77. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 77 as amended to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris has moved Senate Bill 77 as amended to the Senate floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I will assign myself to be the carrier of this bill and leave it to the Senate President to decide where to go next. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 77 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 886. Dr. Warner.
I'm saying that stays.
Oops, I'm sorry, it stays. I knew that. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Senate Bill 886 creates certification process for qualification or continued qualification of small tract forest land. By the way, the small tract forest land option was developed to accommodate the varying needs of small woodland owners. This program allows the STF landowners to delay paying part of their annual property taxes until after the landowners harvest timber. In particular, the landowner pays an annual property tax on 20% of the forest land special assessment value, and this bill also requires owner of timber harvested from small tract forest land to file a severance tax return on a form prescribed by the Department of Revenue. Currently, the Department of Revenue mails a severance tax return form to an owner of timber harvested from STF, and the owner of timber completes and submits the return to the department. So what this bill does is it requires owner of timber harvested from STF to file a severance tax return on a form prescribed by the Department of Revenue. And that's what the bill does.
Thank you very much. Just getting the Kleenex located here. We'll start out with John Phillips. No, that's what I point to when I need chocolate. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. John Phillips of the Department of Revenue. And it'd be perfectly fine with me if David joined me. He's the executive director of OSWA. We pretty much discussed this in the bill and its impact, and I think we're pretty much in agreement on how it might work, but that's up to you. Would you like some background?
Yes, that's what we called you up for. Mr. Ford and Mr. Beyer are both signed up opposition, so I thought I'd take them together.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair.
No problem.
I think the genesis of this issue and the bill was from a report that we provided your committee and to the House Revenue Committee in January, and that was as a result of a note in the statute from 2003 when this program was created. You might recall from our presentation that the program was created for small tract forest land, the small woodland owners, who would otherwise fall under the what we call the main forest land program in Oregon, which does not tax timber, but it taxes forest land. And I think the concept there was that for small woodland owners to pay an annual tax on the full value of their forest land, it's a bit of a difficulty because their revenue flow comes in at harvest when they harvest their timber, and they don't have the large tracts of forest land that a large owner, I'm using large and small a lot, forgive me, but that they would have. So it was mostly, I believe, to do with a cash flow issue because they harvested, on a long time frame. So the program was created whereby 20%, small woodland owners would pay tax on their forest land, 20% of what the large owners paid. But then to make up for the other 80% they were not paying, there was a tax rate created and a tax imposed at the time of harvest or severance. So it's called a severance tax. So the study was to provide a response and a report to you, the legislature, on whether that tax rate that was in the model created for the program in 2003 actually was getting the equivalent of that 80%. That was the goal, was to create a model that produced a rate that captured the 80% to make sure, so to speak, that the small tract forest land owners were paying their part. We did the study, and we provided the report, and at this time we felt like, as you will recall, there's too few years had passed to determine whether it was precisely the right tax rate, and we suggested maybe more time to study the issue after a 10-year period, let's say, because harvest rotations can go from 60 to 80 years. But at that time, in the course of our report, we tried to give you as much detail of the program as possible, including the cost of administering the program, which, as you noted and as the House Revenue Committee noted, was relatively high, actually very high, as a percentage of the program revenues. So at that time, we reported that annual revenues at that point were about $300,000. And the administration costs were about $100,000, being about 30%. We talked to you at that time about the reasons that we thought that occurred, some of which were the fact that the program is really designed to gain most of the revenue down the road. People would not, in other words, enter the program if they intended to harvest right away. Because if they were intending to harvest right away, they might stay out of the forest land small tract program and pay the taxes on their 100% of their forest land, harvest, and then enter the small tract program, at which point they wouldn't pay a severance tax for maybe 60 years. So we did not anticipate, we being the department and the small woodland owners, did not anticipate that there would be many harvests in the early years. But because the program allows small woodland owners up between 10 and 5,000 acres to participate, there are parts of the 5,000 acres that may be coming due for harvest, and it makes no sense to delay that until the remaining acres are harvested. So they sort of, maybe someone would enter the program if they had some harvest to make, but not the majority of their harvest to make. This is all kind of deciding on what is the best option from a tax standpoint. So there are what I would call incidental harvests that occur for small tract forest landowners. And because of that, there are severance tax revenues. But because of all of that, we have to calculate the rate against the harvest annually. We have to send out returns annually, and the return on that, the taxes on that, are small in the early years. Our costs are probably not going to change much if the revenues were millions of dollars. It's the effort is virtually the same. We do a data match. We send out returns. We do very, very similar things to whether there's a small number of people participating or a large number of people, whether there's a small amount of tax or a large amount of tax. So the concern at that time was, how can we bring down this cost and not affect the program in any substantial way? That was our understanding. We went back to the at the Department of Revenue, the chair of the House Revenue Committee asked us to go back, develop some options. We brainstormed in a very short period of time, came up with some options, gave them to Paul, and then the next thing you know, there was a bill. This is the bill. It resembles one of the options that we suggested. And it isn't to say that we think that this is going to be a really good solution or that it will provide much savings. It presents, just the way the bill was drafted, presents some concerns about maybe additional workload and maybe additional confusion for taxpayers. So there are some benefits and there are some drawbacks to the bill, but that's kind of sort of where it comes from. I can talk in more detail about the return processing or anything that has stimulated a question in your mind. I don't know.
Why don't you just stay there and we'll bring the other two up. We just have three people signed up, David Ford and Roger Beyer. Come on up and we'll get the three of you going here and then we'll do questions. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is David Ford, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We're here to oppose the bill as it's drafted and proposed, and for really three primary reasons. The first is that it really only addresses a very narrow scope of the issue here and related to administering this program. Two, there hasn't been any consultation with the stakeholders. There was a group of stakeholders that were including Department of Revenue, Department of Forestry, county assessors, small landowners, and large forest industrial landowners who spent nearly 5 years really working and hammering out what this program would look like and how it would operate. And to my knowledge, there's been no consultation with this group who spent years negotiating and trying to find a solution that would make sense for all involved, including the state. The third reason is that there really is minimal cost savings with this proposal. As we understand it, the program only includes the equivalent of about a half of an FTE spread over several folks within the Department of Revenue. So I think, as John had indicated, there's not going to be much cost savings here, and so if we're going to save maybe $20,000 with this piece of legislation, I question in real terms how much cost increase will occur by landowners calling in and saying, or not filing on time because they aren't receiving their returns in the mail, as all of the forest landowners are receiving their returns in the mail that harvest timber. So I guess the real question for us is, what's another approach to this? And I would suggest to the committee that we fully support finding ways to be cost effective and to reduce overall expenditures any way we can. And we would be more than willing to sit down and work with the Department of Revenue and other stakeholders to come back to figure out how can we streamline the cost, not just of this program, but this program is part of the overall harvest tax program. So if you tinker with a piece, this small program, which is piggybacked on the harvest tax program, it has broader implications as well. And so our suggestion is that if you really are interested in finding ways to reduce cost and create efficiencies, this is not the approach to go, but rather we should put our heads together outside of session and figure out ways together with the full stakeholder involvement of ways to help identify ways to reduce the overall cost of this program and the harvest tax program more broadly. The final comment that I would make is We're concerned that if you stop sending out these tax returns out to folks, you're going to increase cost because people are going to are not going to file, and they're going to be calling the department saying, where do I find these forms? What's going on here? And now we're treating these folks differently than we're treating others that have to pay similar tax that are not involved in this program. So, you know, I guess a deal is a deal. When we cut this deal originally as landowners working in this broader coalition, we are very interested in seeing equity across the board, and when we start messing around with that, it could have some unintended consequences. I don't think we've fully thought through at this point. I'll end my comments there and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here today representing myself and trying to bring a little bit of, I guess, maybe history to the committee. I started working on timber tax issues in this building when I was first elected in 97 in my first session in the House. So this is one of the many issues that I have a lot of experience with, and I guess because it affects me personally, it always has. So that's, I would like to put on the record, though, that my forest land, I'm not a member of the small tract forest land option. So what happened with the, I think it was the 2003 legislation, when landowners had to choose, if you were less than 5,000 acres, you could opt tract by tract. And that means if a landowner owns multiple pieces of property and they're not contiguous to each other, the person could choose which program, if they had less than 5,000 total acres, they wanted to put that land under. And as much you've already heard, that many people who thought, well, I'm going to be harvesting this tract or on this tract within a few years, it makes more tax sense for me to wait and not put that tract into that program. So there is a history here that in timber tax, it's a very long-term, long-looking investment and asset, and if the state is going along changing tax programs for this one class of landowner every five or less years, it creates a lot of confusion, a lot of angst among those taxpayers. This program, prior to this, there were different options, and there was one at that time called the Western Oregon Small Tract Optional Tax, where many of the same landowners who are in this process now at that time paid annually and didn't have a severance tax. But recognize that all timber owners, not necessarily landowners, but all timber owners, when they harvest, they get sent a form by the Department of Revenue so that they can pay their harvest tax. Because in addition to a severance tax, there is also a harvest tax that every timber owner, not necessarily landowner, has to pay. So, Madam Chair, this is a program that was set up for the very smallest landowners who may have other interests, and I think this is a key point. This was argued and negotiated at the time in 2003. They may have other interests than trying to create a profit on their land. Many of these smaller timber owners want to own property and want to own forest land for other reasons, for environmental reasons. They want to hold a tract of timberland and not have to worry about making a profit by harvesting every 30, 40, or 50 years, which industrial landowners do because they are looking at the bottom line. They're looking for wildlife benefits. They're looking for environmental benefits, clean air, clean water, other, you know, natural forest issues, parks. These are the kind of tracts that traditionally get put into this kind of a program because the landowners, if they are working on a sustained yield basis, they would not probably use this program because this program doesn't make sense because you're going to end up paying, you know, having a tax bill that goes up and down if you're on a sustained yield basis, which most of the larger industrial commercial type forest lands are. You're not even allowed to use this program. So I think it's important for this committee and this legislature to realize that this is only about 5 years into a program, that you've got to probably look at a 50-year lifetime in order to see the benefits. And the benefits, as they were intended in 2003, may not be financial to the state. It may be other issues. It may be if it's okay for government to set aside land as a park or as an owl reserve, why isn't it not okay for a private timberland owner, if they choose to do so, to set aside land in a park or as an owl reserve or something like that for fish or for those other aesthetic values that timberland can bring. So I would urge you to tread very cautiously in this arena if you are going to make changes here and include the stakeholders that would be affected so that they can get their input and their buy-in. Because if you don't have their buy-in, you get a revolt in this group.
Get a what?
You get a revolt. So thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions about this that I could.
Thank you. Mr. Phillips, did you?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if I could just add, this is John Phillips again. If I could just add, after we submitted a variety of suggestions that we thought might be useful, we didn't stop there. We started to be very introspective on our program and to look at what it is exactly everyone does. The program manager had just left for another agency, and so the new person came in, started looking at everything we did, how much time it took. We're still reviewing that, but we did identify some other areas that through, and we've been talking about this at the other end of the halls in Ways and Means. The department is, you know, it's always trying to move toward how can we do our work more technologically savvy, more online, and some of the things that we found in our data match process could be improved without making a change that would affect directly the small woodland owners. And so what basically happens when I'm saying that is that the Department of Forestry gets permits for every planned harvest. Some of those are small woodland owner harvests, and some are not. Many are not. And so when we get the data information from forestry on the permits that have been taken out, we have to sort through that and compare that, do a data match with our small woodland owner database and see, which ones do we send a forest products harvest tax return to, which are everyone that filed a permit, and then which of those do we send the small tract forest land option return to? And then if someone is both, they get both returns in the same envelope. So everyone's going to get an envelope stuffed with a return. Some of them would get two returns. So that's why this solution doesn't really help in the mailing costs, but it's the data match part that we're trying to focus in on right now in terms of our processing internally. And we're continuing to work on that as a possible solution to bring some of those costs down, if that's helpful.
Thank you. And Mr. Beyer, do you have, as a small woodland owner yourself, maybe you're a large woodland owner.
Small woodland owner, Madam Chair.
Great purveyor of Christmas trees. Do you have any thoughts on cost savings? Because the administrative costs really are high on this program, and you have a good eye for that sort of thing, and I'm just wondering if you have any observations of things that could be done to reduce the cost.
Madam Chair, I think the main thing is to try to involve the landowners, because there are probably ways that could happen. But I think you have to recognize that when this program was put into place in 2003, I thought it was 2001, but I'll believe you if it was 2003, it was recognized at that time it was going to be an expensive program to administer because of the small number of participants in it, relatively small, and the small volume of harvest on it. So the fact that it's a 30%, I think it's almost astonishing that it's breaking even and actually making money today. I'm serious about that, because when this program was talked about 5 years ago, actually 6 years ago now, it was recognized that it would probably be a revenue loser for some time. But there were other reasons to do it, as I've already mentioned, that aren't necessarily financial, because of the benefits of, you know, these private timberland tracts have. Just the ability of a private timberland owner to hold to a longer age maturity, the environmental benefits, that was recognized. And if you don't have a program like this, a person really can't afford to do that, because you're going to be paying tax as if you were harvesting it when it's the most economically to do that. So I think the group would be happy to look at any ways they can. If there's boxes that can be checked on certain returns at the Department of Forestry that would say that this return requires both forms rather than one, things like that. But, you got to involve the stakeholders, I guess, is what I would say is on that note.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, close public, oh, is anybody else out there who wants to talk on this? All right, a bunch of shaking heads back there. All right, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 886, and we are adjourned. No.